Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're doing a fast track shortcut right into the heart of the gaming world.
Yep.
It's a complex ecosystem where you've got massive corporate strategy, immense pressure, and sometimes some genuinely bizarre workplace controversies all colliding.
It really is.
Our mission today is to pull out the most important nuggets from a whole stack of sources covering, you know, everything from high-stakes console policy down to critical updates that just keep these blockbuster games alive.
That's right. And when you look at the raw data, what's coming across our desk, it really suggests this massive industry-wide tightening.
Kind of tightening.
Yeah. Companies are just laser-focused on, let's say, three central pillars right now.
Yeah.
Ruthless content security, aggressive protection of their hardware ecosystems, and the never-ending, often-rushed process of patching their biggest titles. It's all a game of risk mitigation.
And when you say risk mitigation, I mean, we have to start with the most dramatic story out there right now. It just perfectly encapsulates that extreme secrecy around AAA development.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
We're talking about Rockstar Games allegedly firing multiple developers for leaking internal policies through, well, an almost unbelievable vector. Slack emojis.
It sounds like an urban legend, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But our sources are indicating this wasn't just, you know, a disgruntled employee hitting send on a document.
Bro.
It was a breach of internal communication policy. And the emoji usage, maybe an unauthorized reaction or forwarding a sensitive note in a group chat, that was the mechanism they used to identify who was sharing policy info related to GTA 6.
So the scale of that reaction, it speaks volumes about the value of secrecy. I mean, this is the company making the most anticipated game of the decade.
Following up one of the biggest sellers of all time, GTA 5.
Right. So to fire developers for gross misconduct over something that on the surface feels as trivial as digital reaction icons, it just highlights this intense, almost paranoid atmosphere around their IP.
It's zero-tolerance security theater, but with a very real-world cost. The pressure to deliver a, quote, flawless successor is just immense.
Mm-hmm.
And every minor leak, either as policy details or, you know, a snippet of early footage, it just chips away at that manufactured anticipation. By making a public example of them, Rockstar is sending a very clear message.
Which is?
Every channel is monitored. Every single piece of information is sacred.
And the community reaction to this has been, well, fascinatingly divided. You see so much genuine sympathy for the developers, you know, caught in this overreaching corporate net.
For sure.
But then you have this other segment of the fan base that is 100% behind the move, arguing that for a game this big, security has to be paramount.
It really underscores the high cost of doing business at that top tier.
Yeah.
It absolutely does. And that discussion, it moves so quickly from physical security, like the protocols at Rockstar, to external strategic security.
Okay, so that's a perfect pivot. Let's talk about PlayStation.
Yeah.
Let's connect those two themes. Protecting IP internally versus protecting the platform externally. We have reports that Sony might be strategically pulling back on how often they do PC ports.
Right, despite the big successes.
Exactly. God of War, Horizon Zero Dawn. These are massive hits on PC. It just feels counterintuitive to maximizing revenue. Why would you pump the brakes on a proven cash cow?
And that's the core tension in Sony's entire business model. On one hand, yes, the PC market is huge. It's profitable. It helps create new fans.
Okay.
But the fundamental truth for Sony, and this is unlike Microsoft, is that they are primarily a hardware company. The PlayStation strategy is ecosystem first. Every single decision gets filtered through the lens of, does this make people want to buy a PS5?
So day one parity for their huge single-player games is seen as an existential threat to the PS5's long-term sales pitch.
It's the highest risk. If you, the consumer, know that a brand new super-hyped single-player game will be on PC in 6 months,
you might just wait.
You might wait, or you might skip buying the console altogether. Protecting the ecosystem means protecting PS5 hardware sales, but it's also everything attached to it. The PS Plus subscription revenue, the PSN services, the consumer data they capture.
And let's not forget the tech. I mean, Sony has invested so heavily in things like the DualSense controller, the adaptive triggers, the near-instant loading from the SSD.
Exactly.
If they release a flagship title day and date on PC, all of those unique hardware features are instantly diluted.
Precisely. So our sources suggest the likeliest new model is a kind of highly staggered release approach.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest single-player tentpoles, the games that define the console generation, they'll stay PlayStation exclusive for a pretty significant window, maybe 1 to 3 years.
To maximize that initial incentive. But then what about games that really need a big player base to thrive?
Well, that's the other side of it. Live service games, competitive multiplayer titles.
Mm-hmm.
they need mass adoption. So they will likely come to PC much sooner, maybe within months, if not day and date.
And then there's a third category.
Right, the remasters or director's cuts. Those get dropped onto PC much later, you know, when the original title needs a fresh marketing cycle or a little revenue injection. It's a calculated, tiered approach.
Okay, but here's where that strategy puts a ton of pressure on their internal teams. If you're going to make the PC player wait, potentially for years, the quality of that final port has to be impeccable.
It has to be perfect.
And we know that some previous PlayStation to PC ports, while generally good, did have some performance hiccups.
And this raises such an important point about execution. If Sony slows the cadence, they have to raise the quality bar. For that audience, it means solving these really frustrating core quality of life issues, like, for example, shader compilation stutter.
Can you explain briefly why that's such a huge sticking point for PC players?
Yeah, so shader compilation is when the graphics code is generated for your specific hardware. If the game forces that to happen while you're playing, you get that horrible jarring stutter every time a new effect or area alerts.
It just ruins the immersion.
Completely. Yeah. The PC community expects that to happen during installation or at launch. A pristine port means robust optimization, native ultra-wide support, and crucially, flawless integration of upscaling like DLSS, FSR, and XSS from day one. They're trading speed for quality, and they absolutely have to deliver on that promise.
That makes perfect sense. The promise is that the late port is the definitive version. Mm-hmm. Okay, moving from that long-term strategy to immediate battlefield execution, let's talk major competitive shooters.
All right.
Starting with Call of Duty Black Ops 7, it seems like the focus right now is less on dazzling new content and more on just restoring stability.
That's the pattern we see every single fall. We just had the November 24th server-side hotfix. It went out across every platform, PS4, PS5, Xbox, PC. It was a pure stability patch.
So what did it fix?
The fundamentals. Matchmaking glitches, some weapon balance tweaks that were desperately needed, and debilitating crashes, especially in zombies mode.
Stability over spectacle. But if they're constantly chasing bugs right out of the gate, what does that say about the industry's approach to QA in these annual release cycles?
I mean, that's the critical question, isn't it? The cost of content velocity. When you have an annual release schedule and you're trying to support multiple console generations,
something has to give.
Something has to give. And often, it's that core stability. The internal pressure to generate new battle passes, new events, it outweighs the time needed for exhaustive QA. So the community is happy, the bugs are fixed quickly. But the pattern, big launch, big bugs, quick fix it, suggests the business model itself is part of the problem.
And we've seen the campaign described as an uneven step down from last year, so getting the multiplayer polish is just absolutely vital to keep that engagement going.
Agreed. The quick fixes earn them points, for sure. But the disappointment over the lack of new content is still there. That rumored winter event might help, but for now, players are grinding on a familiar, albeit cleaner, slate.
All right, so let's pivot to Battlefield 6, which seems to be embracing the spectacle. DICE is teasing a major new map, Eastwood, described as a Hollywood-inspired urban war zone.
And Battlefield 6 has done well since launch. You know, it peaked near 750,000 players. A new map is the perfect way to keep that momentum going.
So what's the vibe?
Eastwood is a pure city fight. We're trading open fields for tight, high-density blocks, neon alleys, skyline battle lanes. It's designed for close-quarters chaos and a lot of verticality.
So what does that verticality, that tight block structure, what does that mean for the game's tactical meta? How do players adapt?
It fundamentally changes class utility. On a map like Eastwood, controlling the rooftops becomes the primary objective. Squads going to need to master coordinated zip line and rappel maneuvers. Yeah. Flanking from high ground will dictate the whole flow of the match.
Which means the value of certain classes just skyrockets.
Absolutely. Recon players become invaluable, not just for sniping across skylines, but for placing sensor grids to track movement in the dense streets below. And engineers will be essential for denying vehicle access in those narrow corridors. And support players become the linchpin, critical for holding the small, enclosed choke points that define the map.
My big concern with urban battlefield maps, though, is that two locked lanes forever syndrome, where nothing changes and every match feels identical.
Yeah.
So for this map to work, DICE really needs to embrace deep, meaningful destruction.
That is the make-or-break element for Eastwood. It can't just be cinematic explosions. It has to be functional. They need what players call smart crumble states, the ability to blow out walls on skyscrapers or collapse stairwells to open up new paths.
Or shut down enemy routes.
Exactly. If the destruction is dynamic, it gives teams a chance to shift the geometry of the fight late in the game.
Yeah.
If they miss that opportunity, Eastwood just becomes another set of rigid corridors.
That's a great analysis. Okay, switching gears completely for a positive consumer nugget. Nintendo made an early holiday move.
A smart one.
They launched their Cyber Deal sale on the eShop way ahead of Black Friday.
This is a brilliant consumer-friendly move. They're avoiding the inevitable server strain of Black Friday itself by giving everyone an early window to browse and buy. It's a good way to keep sentiment positive during that critical holiday quarter.
And we're talking about serious titles here. Big discounts on cornerstone games like Breath of the Wild, Super Mario Odyssey, Animal Crossing.
And DLC packs, too, for games like Splatoon 2 and Fire Emblem. It's the perfect time for any Switch owner to expand their library without all the pressure.
Okay, let's pivot now to global talent. Moving away from the big publishers to a really fascinating governmental initiative in North Africa, Morocco has launched the second edition of its video game creator program.
This is a huge strategic move by their Ministry of Youth, Culture, and Communication. It really confirms Morocco's ambition to position itself as a key player in the digital creative economy.
And what does the program actually involve?
It's intense. It's a 9-month training curriculum, includes a professional internship, and it's aimed at 40 participants. They're partnering with the French Embassy and ISART Digital, which is a very well-regarded institution.
So this isn't just vocational training.
No, this is a national investment in IP creation. They're trying to compete with other outsourcing hubs while also fostering their own domestic game studios, a concerted effort to nurture the next generation.
That focus speaks volumes about where national economies see future growth. Okay, let's wrap this up with a rapid-fire round of quick nuggets.
Let's do it. We'll start with the AI frontier. Grok 5, an advanced model, is now allegedly showing it can outplay human League of Legends champions.
Which is significant because LOL requires real-time strategy, team coordination, much harder problems for AI than, say, chess.
Much harder. Then, the crossover content machine keeps turning. Playboi Carti has announced a collaboration with Fortnite.
Which could be anything. In-game concert, exclusive skins.
The speculation is high. And a great quality of life win for console players. Control. Ultimate Edition finally got its big console update for PS5 and Xbox Series X and S.
So it's now in parity with the PC version.
Yep, smoothing out ray tracing and optimizing frame rates. That consistency across platforms is so important for long-term IP health.
Finally, don't forget to cast your vote. The Steam Awards 2025 voting is underway right now until December 1st. 11 categories, including the big one, Game of the Year.
So if we synthesize everything we've covered today,
yeah,
what are the key takeaways for you? We saw that extremely high cost of protecting IP internally at Rockstar,
where even a minor digital leak is punished so severely.
And that pressure flows directly into the external strategies of companies like Sony, which is making these calculated decisions to protect its multi-billion dollar hardware ecosystem by, well, throttling the rate of PC ports.
And on the execution side, we see the consequences of rapid development in Black Ops 7, where stability has to come before new content. But conversely, Battlefield 6 is taking strategic risks with map design, banking on destruction mechanics to keep the meta dynamic. The industry is both heavily guarded and constantly shifting.
Yeah, the industry is clearly investing heavily in preventing leaks and in nurturing new talent, like we saw in Morocco. But the biggest challenge, the biggest decision point, is balancing that immediate gratification of quick patches versus the longer-term strategic decision of where and when to release their best IP.
The risk is high.
But the potential reward of securing a platform is even higher.
That tension, the one between long-term strategy and short-term quality, that leads us right to our final provocative thought for you to mull over. If Sony's new strategy is to delay PC ports to ensure pristine quality and protect the PS5, does that slow burn, guaranteed quality model ultimately benefit the PC player more than rushed, potentially buggy day one releases? Are we heading toward a future where waiting longer actually means playing better?
A fascinating question. Thanks for diving deep with us.
We'll catch you next time.